You're listening to a People of Note podcast, as heard on Classic 1027.
Good evening and welcome to People of Note on Classic 1027 on this Sunday evening. I'm Richard Koch, and this program is broadcast every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. And in it, I talk to someone who is a person of note, and we listen to music of their choice. And I'm delighted to say that thanks to the wonders of modern technology, I can speak to someone in Makanda, what used to be Grahamstown, tonight, and that is Catherine Foxcroft. Good evening.
Good evening, Richard.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a great pleasure. And I think just before we set off, perhaps you could tell people who you are and what you are in the world and in Makanda.
Gosh. All right. So who I am in Makanda, I work at the Rhodes University Music Department. So my areas of expertise are piano and music psychology. I'm currently head of department. I have been for 5 years, and this will be my last year. So I've served 2 terms, and I'm ready to get back to music and art. Anybody who served as an HOD anywhere in any profession knows that it's more administration, which I enjoy, but it's served its purpose now, and I've had enough. So the fun part of my job is the piano students, the ensemble students, and Music Health and the Brain is a course we offer. It's an introductory course to music psychology at the university, and it often leads to students then doing postgraduate work, so at honors level, master's, PhD, in psychology or cognition. We don't offer the master's in therapy, which the Pretoria University does, but therapy is only one avenue in music psychology. So that's who I am in Makanda. I'm also a mom with a son who plays cello quite beautifully. I'm biased, I realized. I'm his mom. But he's introduced me very much to string playing, which I didn't do as a child. I was a wind player and piano. So it's been so educational to see somebody go from scratch to sort of a grade 8 level in cello. In the world, I'm not so sure anymore who I am. I've been here in South Africa for now 17 years. I left Germany, where I studied for and worked for 12 years, right after leaving the University of Cape Town. I went there in 1991 and returned with my husband in 2003 to start work at Rhodes. And yeah, we've been here ever since. So in the world, I think the most I've done internationally since leaving Germany is I have performed on the Maxim Gorky ship. I have attended numerous international conferences where I've presented my research, because I did a performance, the equivalent of the performance PhD in Germany. I did the academic PhD, or rather DMAS, through Pretoria University when I came back and graduated with that in 2014. So a lot of my international work now is really, I mean, I've published a few articles, but it's more attending conferences when we could travel to the conferences. And yeah, I suppose that's who I see myself at the moment.
And that's a fantastic introduction. Thank you very much. And just to say, your area of interest, if I'm correct, in psychology is the psychology of performance and correct. The nervous stress associated with that. Is that correct?
Yes. So my research itself dealt with the degree or extent to which performers themselves experience any kind of emotion when performing. So I focused on pianists in this, and I interviewed international pianists who came to South Africa to perform, and I compared it with student pianists. Well, they weren't really students, but they were, let's say, young, and they were performing at the UNISA International Piano Competition. And that was, I think, 2012 or 2011. I might have my dates wrong, but it was the one then. There is a kind of a myth. That's quite a strong word, but people in an audience at a music performance tend to think that because the musician who is performing, is playing such emotive music that they themselves must be experiencing strong emotions. And as a performer myself, I knew that this actually wasn't true and, in fact, couldn't be true, because just even physiologically, if you get overwhelmed by any kind of emotion, you will often lose the even physiological control of your instruments. If you're a singer, as a pianist, your hands might shake or your knees might shake. But most importantly, you stopped listening, and all sorts of problems come in when you, as the performer, stopped listening. So I knew that there was something else going on, but I wasn't sure at the time how really others experienced it, or what their experience was. I knew that sometimes I was overwhelmed with when I performed, but that that wasn't ideal.
Yeah.
So that was what I investigated. And if you want to know the result, do you want to know the result?
Let's listen to some music. No, we're going to listen to some music first.
We get a short version.
And then we need the short version. So let's start with your first choice of music, which is Autumn Leaves. This is Errol Garner. And here it comes. That was Autumn Leaves featuring Errol Garner and the choice of Catherine Foxcroft, who's my guest in People of Note. And it is autumn right now, so it's an appropriate time to play Autumn Leaves. And perhaps just before we get back to psychology, just tell us about your enjoyment of jazz.
I have loved jazz since I was a student. I didn't really listen to it much as a child, but while I was at UCT, they offered jazz at the time. And then when I went overseas, there was quite a lot of jazz in Germany. There, in fact, was a jazz festival in Hannover, which was quite a large international festival. And I just began to love it. And I wasn't playing jazz, but I was experimenting a bit to try and earn some money in hotel bars. That sounds dreadful, but
we've all done that in our time.
And it was very lucrative. And so I just take, you know, jazz standards with chords. And obviously, I don't claim to be able to improvise like a jazz pianist at all. But I would play also, and Autumn Leaves was one that I particularly enjoyed playing. So, then when I just started to discover, artists like Errol Garner and sort of their different versions of it, the one that's just played is always kind of just my breath catches. It's the kind of it's always with me. It's music. In music, it's the timings that I think rhythm is a huge factor in my musical experience. And anybody starts playing with amazing changes in the time and space of something, which Errol definitely does in this one, and actually probably quite a few of the artists I've put on my list today. I'm enthralled. So Autumn Leaves has a special place in my heart. It makes me think of playing on a nightly basis in a Hanover bar at about midnight, on a weekly basis, or daily basis, actually, during certain periods. So, yeah, very special, close to my heart.
Good. And actually, here on Classic 1027, we often play you performing with the Hanover Hochschule Orchestra, I think. Is that correct? It's a piano concerto.
Beethoven, yes.
Was that during your student time as well?
That was, yes, it was my final exam. So earlier I mentioned that I did the PhD performance equivalent, PhD equivalent in performance in Germany. They didn't offer the academic one, which I have done in South Africa. So that was one of the three final exams. And so there's a CD that I have of that. There is a more recent performance that I performed with the Free State Symphony Orchestra in 2018, and that's actually uploaded onto YouTube. It is probably my favorite concerto. The minute I say that, though, I think of the Beethoven Fourth, which I haven't performed, but which I have been learning, especially last year, where I had more time to practice and learn new music, so I got quite far with getting that together. And, I hope I can one day get on stage and play that.
Yeah, that is I have to say that's one of my favorite pieces. It's just it's an amazing piece, especially that the slow movement.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. Now, interestingly enough, you said when you listen to Autumn Leaves, it makes you catch your breath, which implies a little bit of emotion somewhere. So perhaps let's just get back to that subject, because I think it's a very interesting subject. And I noticed when I was in your music department, whenever I was last at the Graham's, the National Arts Festival, that there is a board up there with a whole lot of comments from people about emotion in performance. And
yes.
You were saying earlier that you have in your time been overwhelmed, and I certainly have. When it's got, in my case, it's also got to do with, let's say, conducting the St. Matthew Passion. By the time you get to the end, it's been 3 hours of very intense concentration when you're holding everything together. And the final chorus is so overwhelming that I certainly have been overwhelmed. Fortunately, when you're conducting, you're not actually directly in touch with any instrument. So whether you your touch becomes shaky or your knees shake is not of any interest to anyone. But I have certainly been overwhelmed in performance. And just talk to us about that, because obviously some people, I mean, people are different and some people do get emotional. But what you're saying is that you have to be very careful not to lose control.
Absolutely. And as you actually just answered your own question in a way, you talk about the concentration that that's required if you're conducting a three-hour work. And concentration was really the key to my studies in the end, because obviously the performer does experience something. We're not robots.
Yeah.
But the question was what am I experiencing, or what is actually happening with the performer, if indeed one can't feel emotions to the extent that we become overwhelmed. And I'd like to just first of all separate between listener and performer, because the listener should be overwhelmed, or that's the aim, that's the goal of the performer, to provide an experience where the audience is transported to a realm of might be ecstasy or joy or a release of pent up more negative emotions. So your point as a performer is to touch, is to raise or to connect with people on an emotional level. But the performer, if you can imagine, Richard, so the music that you're conducting is overwhelming, but should you give into it, if any time before the last of the closing seconds of the piece, one does lose concentration. You lose the bigger picture. You lose a sense of it could be the timing, the togetherness of the group. I'll talk as a pianist because I'm not a conductor, so that's silly if I talk as a conductor. But there is so much more going on than the expression of emotion.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if I cut to the chase, there's a psychological term, a well-known psychological term known as flow, which is an experience that the performer is actually experiencing when it is an optimal performance. So if you are performing at your absolute best and you are immersed in your performance, your level of concentration elevates you to a sort of a transcendent state, which is not emotional. There might be a part of it which is emotional. I mean, it's not going to be not there, but it's a far higher experience. It's a transcendent. You transcend your ego. You lose track of time. You lose track of who's in the audience. You lose track of the actual earthly either limitations of the setting or earthly anything of the setting.
Actually. It's a sort
and
of
you exist in this creative plane where there is only joy. And where there's a sense of freedom. And I found myself writing in the thesis a sense that you're able to create. And I've always found this, even as a student, when I first started playing with orchestras, in a performance, there would be these moments where I felt so free. And I did different kinds of timings with, you know, even minute timings between notes, where you had the liberty to do it, where you weren't having to keep time with the orchestra.
Yeah.
But if there were moments in between, which I had not done in my practice room, and I had not done under any other kind of sort of playthrough or mini performance version of that particular concerto. And the more I interviewed the performers, so in the end I interviewed 10 pianists, the more it became clear that the older or more experienced the pianists became, I think one of my oldest, she was in her 50s and the others 30s, 40s. And of course the students were young, sort of in early 20s. I shouldn't call them two students because some of them had graduated. That experience was what we are after as performers.
Yeah, it's a sort of sense of elation.
As a younger person, you've had a taste of it. And many say that that taste of that kind of sense of freedom to just be and to be at your most creative was what drew them, perhaps unconsciously, but it drew them towards performance. And I must also stress it doesn't only happen in music. It can happen. Everybody who's listening to this has had this experience. They might have been writing a paper. They might have been gardening. They might have been rock climbing. It's a state of being where you lose track of time, space, ego, anything but the object itself. Not object, but the activity or task itself. And you almost merge with that task. You almost become one with that task. And the psychologist who coined this phrase, his name is Csikszentmihalyi. And I think it was 1990, in fact. Yeah. And since then, it's become a very well-known phenomenon. And it's a very delightful phenomenon. It's a very delightful place to be. And that is what the performer has experienced. When you as the audience member are watching and listening to somebody who appears to be transformed or in a different state of mind or a different, you know, absolutely in a state of ecstasy, that's correct. But to call it an emotional state is incorrect.
Yeah. Okay. Well, after all that, Love Is Here to Stay is your next choice, and let's just listen to that. That was Jackie Byard and Love Is Here to Stay, the choice of Catherine Foxcroft, who's my guest in People of Note tonight. And as you could hear from our last exchange, she's done a PhD on the subject of emotion in performance. And I find it a very, very interesting subject. Let's just talk about performers for a moment, because piano performers have practiced for hundreds of hours before they give a recital, let's say. So that a lot of that activity on the stage is mechanical in a way. It's a mechanical memory function.
But
when you've memorized something absolutely perfectly, of course, you are then at liberty to do all sorts of things in your performance. Yes. And I guess this is also connected in a way, if we think of the people like the San people who have a trance dance, it's a similar type of thing.
Yes.
Where you enter another state almost.
Yes. Absolutely. If I think of trance music, because I do lecture a little bit on that in my Music Health and the Brain course. So in trance music, it's a little bit different in the sense that if one becomes overwhelmed, one's not actually performing so that there are people watching you.
Yes.
You are actually immersed in the experience itself. So you actually, you're not, that distinction I made earlier between performer and listener doesn't really apply when going into trance music.
Yes. And actually, I was thinking also while you were talking of myself as, or anyone who is conducting, that in a way you are in the lucky position as a conductor of being both listener and performer.
Yes.
Which is a really interesting thing. I mean, I hadn't really considered it consciously before, but while you were talking, I was thinking, yes, you are both of those things because you're in control of it, but you're hearing the overall picture where the people in the orchestra, you're like the audience in hearing the overall picture because that's actually your job. So no wonder it becomes overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah. Rather you than me.
I know. It's a tough job, you know. everyone thinks it is a very rewarding one, and everyone thinks, of course, you know, the orchestra players, they say, "Ah, you just stand there and wave your arms."
Yeah.
but it's an extraordinary privilege actually to be in that position, and I'm always grateful when I can do these like great works that have been written by Bach or Mendelssohn or whoever it is, and just enjoy the music on sort of vicariously on behalf of the audience. Now, blues music is powerful, as we all know, and Leonard Cohen particularly is powerful, partly because of his incredible lyrics that he writes. So just tell us about Everybody Knows, and then we're going to listen to it.
Oh, it's such a beautiful song. I also discovered Leonard Cohen in my 20s, but wasn't that drawn to him initially. But as I've matured, let's say, rather than got older, it is his lyrics. There's a stunning video that goes along with that particular recording that I've sent you. And I don't know what it is about his voice, quality of voice. Some, I mean, my family can't stand listening to that particular quality of voice. And there's something, it just hits that spot in my heart. I don't know how much better I can explain it. That wasn't actually a very good explanation. But the combination of the words and his voice, the message, there's a pathos there. There's such a beauty in and the theme in that particular song of going, the message of love from big, I really struggled to say it better than that, Richard. Yeah. So I think I'm fumbling here.
No, that's all right. Everybody Knows, this is the famous Leonard Cohen. That was the wonderful Leonard Cohen with Everybody Knows, the choice of Catherine Foxcroft, who's my guest in People of Note. That's the program you're listening to on Classic 1027. It's broadcast every Sunday from 6 to 8. And I'm Richard Koch, and I introduce you to someone, and we listen to their story, really, the story that they have to tell. And let's just go back for a moment to Makanda and Rhodes University, where you are teaching. What is the state of music at the moment at Rhodes University? Do you have a good turnout of students? Have you got a large staff? How? Just give us a bit of a picture of the music department at Rhodes University.
Good. All right. So the department, so we're quite a small department in terms of staff, students, and indeed our facilities. You know, if I compare it to the Conservatoire in Stellenbosch or Pretoria University or any of the others. However, we are connected with ILAM, the International Library of African Music, and I've been here now since 2003, and it has grown exponentially since 2003, partly because of the approach we took a couple of years ago. We changed our Bachelor of Music degree, and indeed our BA Music degree, to include African ensembles and the study of African music. So whereas when I originally came here, we offered quite a traditional music degree in the sense that it had been formerly quite Western-oriented. And if I think of our practical students, we offered Western art music and jazz, which was quite exclusive because it meant that those students who wanted to study music in some way didn't have prior knowledge or experience and had no teaching in those in any kind of instrument or voice at secondary level could actually, well, they were restricted. They couldn't actually study music with us. So a couple of years ago, we included African ensembles as a degree major possibility in practical music. Practical music is one of the majors that you do as a Bachelor of Music or BA Music, BSc Music student. And our numbers they're radically different now. So whereas previously in a first year, we would have been delighted with 20 newcomers, first-year students, we now have on average about 100 first-year students coming in.
That's fantastic.
So the degree itself, so in an academic, if we look at the academic courses, we had musicology, which was Western art and jazz, music history and theory. This we then changed to, again, be more inclusive, not only of different people and their backgrounds and their choices of music, but also what we offered as academics. So if we stick with music psychology, this is now, music psychology is a very well-recognized field of expertise in musicology, but it was not offered as part of a degree here. It was offered. I initiated, and I and two colleagues, Mark Duby was one of them, who's no longer here, but he was head of department at the time, and Diane Thram, who was in ILM, she's also since retired. So we initiated this course, which was offered to the broader campus, and it was always very popular. I think if you say health and brain and music, I mean, even I am attracted to that title. So we've always had a lot of students involved. But we actually then made it part of the BMAS, or the academic, the music major. So again, whereas previously, until we opened up and expanded our degree, the course musicology to become music culture and history, where we offer four different components that you will dabble in all of them before you major in your third year. But that the new included courses are psychology, world music, Western art music, and jazz and African American music. So those became options for people that wanted to major in musicology. The numbers look, if I say now at first year level, whereas we had, when it was only Western art music and jazz in, you know, years gone by before we opened up our degree, we would have been happy with 10 to 15 students at first year level coming in. And now currently we have close to 200 at first year level.
That's fantastic.
So they're not all doing a Bachelor of Music, yes, and they may not all be majoring, but equally if you look at a psychology, sociology, English department, all of that at first year level, not everyone's going to be a psychologist or a sociologist, yeah, or something like that. So we found that the students have remained, so they don't sort of do 1 year and then drop. Our numbers are radically different and radically higher than when I first came to Rhodes. And I feel extremely good about offering what I think of as the three pillars of music in South Africa at Rhodes. So we offer African ensemble music, we offer jazz, and we offer Western art, and it's inclusive. So it's inclusive to all, no matter what your background is. You may have done matric music, and then there's the option for you to go into Western art and jazz, or indeed African ensemble if you prefer. But there is also that offer for that student who loves music, but where there was no music offered at secondary level, no individual teaching, nothing like that at all. They come in and they can learn and study at first year level, and indeed go through to fourth year.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what
fabulous
we offer here.
All right, well, here comes your next choice. Now, this is Carlos Gardel and a piece called Por Una Cabeza. That was Carlos Gardel and his piece Por Una Cabeza, the tango from that film Scent of a Woman. Also quite an emotional sort of piece, and tangos, of course, are quite emotional dances. And I just want to pick up on something you said there. You talked about music and health, because I'm a firm believer that music is actually not only good for your health, but almost essential for one's physical and mental health. And I don't know whether you have any opinion on that.
I agree absolutely. And you and I are speaking as professional musicians.
Yeah.
It's perhaps a little bit different in that sense. Quite a few research papers, you know, are indicating that music is necessary, but it also can provide a lot of anxiety, especially if there's performance involved,
yeah,
or if you're earning your living from it. Or so in that sense, it's not only positive in a health sense.
Yeah.
But if we look at the general public, people who actively, unconsciously use music for purposes of release, emotional release, of changing their moods, of feeling better, or of feeling consoled. It's been absolutely eye-opening in classes where we look at the common use of music, the everyday,
yeah,
use of music by everybody who's in that class, because there's never a person in the class who's there they don't love music.
Yeah.
And the kinds of things that people use music for, it rivals the use of medication. It's of course used in treatments of illnesses as serious as Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or indeed cancer treatments and all sorts of things like that. In that sense, it's it doesn't replace medication, but it's used holistically. But if I look at the students who are, by and large, a very healthy, robust group of people, you seldom today see people without their headphones on walking down streets. The technology has allowed each and every one of us to have our own playlist. The younger generations of my son's generation, the schoolgoers, you know, gone are the days of even wasting time fast-forwarding anything. I mean, I think of cassettes and I shudder. Or, you know, on a radio, or having to go and buy that particular single, you know, that you've saved up for. I mean, everything is so accessible now. And that's amazing, you know. So people can moderate their emotions, manage their day-to-day feelings. A lot of students tell me that they actually use music to get up in the morning. So, you know, they might be lying there and thinking, oh, it's such a challenging day, or how am I going to get up, or I'm just too depressed, or I'm too overwhelmed with work. On goes some upbeat music, and off they go. So, music definitely has a very general use for the healthy population, of health and well-being, and it complements medical treatment in more severe illnesses. And for you and I as professionals, I mean, you know, this last year has taught me that much as I might moan about performing or performing experiences or opportunities or venues or what attitudes or what have you, because I've had all my moans like everybody, when it's removed and you actually can't do it, it's a whole different ballgame. Yeah. So I really realized and learned exactly what music is to me. And how my identity is linked inextricably with being a performer, being a musician, having had that as part of my life since as long as I can remember. You know, from formal lessons starting at age 5 to studies overseas to amazing experiences of performance that are either good or not good, through meeting musicians, through being part of belonging to a group of performing musicians. It's taught me a lot, not so much even of well-being, although maybe it is, because if it's your identity and your identity is then removed or not allowed, I think I seriously suffered from some depression last year in not being able to actually even plan a concert, let alone play one.
Yeah, and this is part of the reason why I think musicians just go on in life. Very seldom do musicians retire. They just go on until they don't go on anymore, because it's so much part of their existence. Okay, let's listen now to some singing. This is from Rigoletto, Bella Figlia dell'Amore, a famous quartet. That was music by Giuseppe Verdi from Act 3 of Rigoletto, Bella Figlia dell'Amore, one of the most famous ensemble pieces in all of opera, complicated four-part writing for voices there by Verdi. And it's the choice of Catherine Foxcroft, who's my guest in People of Note. And actually, talking about opera, this is one area where there's lots of emotion always, lots of emotion in opera. And essentially, it's about emotion, I think. And I just want to say, Catherine, that recently there have been some green shoots in the music world here, certainly in Gauteng, and we've done some open-air concerts. And I've been amazed at how happy people have been to be back listening to music again. We've had sold-out venues, although they're not huge. We've only been allowed sort of 100 people or 250 people, but completely sold out, and very quickly, because people are longing,
desperate
for this sort of experience again with their children, with their families. And actually, I've noticed much younger people now suddenly coming to concerts, as though they've realized during lockdown that there's something else to life. And maybe you've got some comment about that.
Yes. Now, we've had similar experiences here. There are shoots here as well. So there are a couple of smaller concerts starting to happen. I have a couple of invitations to play at music societies, but The understanding is that I'll be given short notice to say, okay, it's fine to come now. We've got permission. And currently it does look like we do have permission to perform. We had a Baroque concert planned at the end of last year at Rhodes, which unfortunately at the last minute, the audience part of it was cancelled. Hugely grateful that our university management permitted the concert to go ahead because it was partly exam, so the students, you know, that was their examination. But witnessing that, actually, that was the first time I'd heard live music since March. And I was then overwhelmed to speak about it. Just hearing the actual sound, because there is nothing more dreadful than sound on Zoom. I think I speak on behalf of every musician, teacher or learner around the world. It's dreadful. So, I mean, recordings are, you just, the whole energy is lost. So we had that at the end of last year. So I witnessed, absolute joy from those performers, the students able to actually play and do what they'd been training to do. And then in the streets, where if I'd bump into an audience member, because we had, in fact, got as far as selling tickets, but then we had that terrible second wave happening, starting to happen, and all events were cancelled, you know, countrywide at Varsity. So it wasn't, it wasn't just specific to Rhodes. But people saying to me, "Oh, we can't believe it was cancelled. We'd so looked forward to it." So people have missed it. We had a master's exam here 2 weeks ago. We're again absolutely packed, but you know, only 25 people allowed in. So an invitation. You know, the guests were, the audience members were invited by the performer, but electric. Yep. And it reminded me actually of my teacher Arivadi said to me. Oh, the whole class, actually, more than 20 years ago, you know, we were lamenting the small audiences. And he said, you know what? If you've got 11 people sitting in that audience and it's you playing to them, it's a full house, because every one of them is wanting to be there and loving every moment of it.
Yeah.
So don't complain. It's starting up at Rhodes again as well, and I hope we've got all our practical students back, so we are also permitted to do face-to-face teaching. With all the precautions, obviously, and we've got screens for extra protection. We had that the whole of last year, in fact, for about 6 months, and had no cases of COVID reported through that. So, we're hopeful.
Good.
It does feel a little bit better than a year ago, where I recall we were in our houses and, only going out for food and medicine.
Yeah. Now, we're going to talk about chamber music in a moment, but let's listen to some Brahms first. This is part of the piano quartet in G minor. It's the third movement. I'm not sure who's playing in this, and maybe you can tell us when it was the one that you chose. So let's listen to it first. This is Brahms coming up. That was the third movement of the piano quartet in G minor by Brahms. And it's the choice of Catherine Foxcroft. Can you tell us who was playing there?
I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
Richard, the name should be there. It is one of the recordings that's very well. It's a young group. I can't tell you their names offhand. It's not in front of me here.
And do you much chamber music?
Yes. So that I almost sent you my own recording of that. With the Odeon Quartet, but the first bit of it is cut off. So it's my favorite. So the Brahms chamber music is my absolute favorite to play. I played the Brahms Quintet the year before last, and I've played that quartet quite a few times. I actually played it as one of my exam pieces at Pretoria University for my DMAS. I mean, I love Brahms in all sorts. I mean, for the piano concerti, the symphonies, the chamber music, the solo works. I really connect with him. That's something that happened in my 20s studying in Germany. I wasn't a Brahms lover or player at all while I was in South Africa before I left South Africa. But yes, and the chamber music. So I play probably more chamber music than solo at the moment.
Yeah.
Also
a special thing to play with other people rather than as a solo recital. I mean, I from that point of view, chamber music is very special. That sort of sharing of emotions. Yeah.
Yeah. And not just emotion. I mean, there is a lot more to music than emotion. It's a very important part of it, but For me, the cognitive aspects of simply, you know, creating different time spaces, sound pictures, soundscapes, and working with different personalities is interesting. And in the end, so I played that quartet, for example, that you've just played with I said it with the Odeon, but I've also played it in Germany with a group of friends when I was still a student, when I was learning it. And it's always a different experience. So the love of the music, I think, more than my own personal or emotional satisfaction.
Yeah.
I think draws me, because sometimes I don't want to, you know, you don't want to feel emotional.
So yeah.
You will choose something that's more spiritually uplifting,
but you can,
or
just,
that you connect on a different kind of level.
Yeah, and like performing Bach, for example, I just always exult in the brilliance of his music. Yeah. He's unbelievable. Mm. Now, I guess your next choice is probably with your son in mind. This is the Rachmaninoff cello sonata.
With Yo-Yo Ma.
Yes, with Yo-Yo Ma and Emmanuel Ax. Let's listen to that. That was the third movement of the cello sonata by Rachmaninoff, featuring the wonderful Yo-Yo Ma and Emmanuel Ax. And I just, did you by any chance hear Yo-Yo Ma in Cape Town when he was here?
Unfortunately, no, I didn't. Would have loved to.
Yeah, you see, that was another concert that amazed me, because there must have been probably 5,000 people there. And how many of them, under normal circumstances, would listen to Yo-Yo Ma, I wonder, listen to, you know, a cello sonata by Rachmaninoff. But because it was Yo-Yo Ma, they were all there. And I think that's an extraordinary thing. And I wonder how many of those people then went on to listen to other stuff, other music.
Yes, yes.
I find that an interesting story.
Yes, I do too.
And, I mean, there's another guy, Bobby McFerrin, who does this too. I mean, he's an extraordinary musician. I don't know if maybe our listeners don't even know what I'm talking about with Bobby McFerrin, but if you just Google Bobby McFerrin, you will find some amazing stuff on YouTube and various places on the internet of this incredible musician who is just so versatile and talented and brilliant. And he sort of draws people into his orbit in the most extraordinary way, a bit like Yo-Yo Ma, I think.
Yeah. But that particular recording you've just played with Emmanuel Ax is, I mean, I've listened to many versions of that sonata. I've played it myself, the piano version, obviously. And that's just the best. I mean, that's absolutely extraordinary playing.
Yep. Now, we're going to go back. I think we should play something of you playing now, because it's always good to have my guests playing themselves. And we're going to listen to Schubert. We've had some Rachmaninoff now, so let's listen to some Schubert. This is the scherzo from the sonata in B flat major. Let's listen to that. That was the scherzo and trio from the Schubert sonata in B flat major, from a CD called A Portrait, and it's played by my guest in People of Note, Catherine Foxcroft. And looking at the cover photograph, was it recorded in the Beethoven room at Rhodes University?
The photographs were taken at Rhodes University in the Beethoven Hall, but it was actually recorded on the Steinway in Paul. At the Hugo Lamprecht Center, in their concert hall there.
Oh, yeah, which is, that concert hall is lovely, actually, very good for sound.
Yes. Yeah, and I had an awesome sound engineer, Nolan Chayet. He produced it for me, and then the photography and the design of the computer, CD, came later.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be launched, at the beginning of last year, and then the whole year it was on hold. And I still haven't actually technically launched it, because we can't even have a gathering yet at Rhodes.
Yeah.
In that sense, that can't, you know, we can't do virtually. So I hope that at some point I'll be able to play a bit of it and, you know, have a bit of a gathering.
If people would like to get hold of it, how do they do that?
Well, they can either – I have sold quite a few. I can either be emailed directly or I haven't done it yet. I'm so sorry to say, but my students are begging me to put it on Spotify or to one of the various I haven't yet, but I'm planning to. I have to get myself.
And are you,
because I haven't launched it, I've kind of left it, and I don't want to do a virtual launch. But if they want it, people are very welcome to email, and I will post it.
Are you happy to give out your email over the air, or should they email me?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Will you give it?
Yep. C.Foxcroft. That's Foxcroft at ru.ac.za. So people will find it anyway. That's my Rhodes address, and it's obviously on the Rhodes website.
Yes.
Otherwise, I can be WhatsApped at 079-310-2683, and I'd be very happy to post.
Okay, just give us that number again,
079-310-2683.
Very good. And here comes that email address again, c.foxcroft@ru.ac.za. And I'll give those out again at the end of the program. But that's for the CD, which is not been launched yet by my guest on People of Note, Catherine Foxcroft. It's called A Portrait, and it has the Schubert Sonata in B-flat major and then the Rachmaninoff Sonata number 2. These are both solo performances on piano. And we're going to listen to you again now. This is a live performance of Beethoven Concerto number 3, and I think we should play the slow movement from that.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That's fine, yes.
And this was with the Free State Symphony Orchestra, presumably with your brother-in-law conducting?
No, it wasn't with him. I'm trying to remember. Oh, very nice conductor. I can't remember his name. Hold on a second. It's on my wall there. I'll be able to tell you.
So here it comes. This is the slow movement of the Beethoven Concerto No. 3 with the Free State Symphony Orchestra. This was recorded in 2018. That was my guest in People of Note, Catherine Foxcroft, playing the Beethoven Concerto No. 3 with the Free State Symphony Orchestra. And that was recorded a couple of years ago. And we may know who was conducting.
Conrad van Alphen.
Conrad van Alphen, who is a South African, originally from...
No, he's a... I think he's a Dutch...
Yeah, but he was born here.
Oh, beg your pardon. Yes. Sorry, he lives currently...
He lives in the Netherlands, but he comes from Pretoria and via Bloemfontein.
That's right.
And for some years, he played in the National Symphony Orchestra. And now is a conductor. He has his own chamber orchestra, the Rotterdam Chamber Orchestra, and he does fantastic work. So that's that.
It was a wonderful experience. I really enjoyed working with him.
Yeah, no, he's a great conductor, wonderful conductor, and he comes here. Well, he did come here quite often.
Yes.
Yeah. Now we've got a little time left, and we've got one more piece of Leonard Cohen coming up. Earlier, we talked about the fact that you had opened your courses at Rhodes University, and you've gone in a slightly different direction. And there's lots about Rhodes Must Fall. There has been lots about that. Do you think you've gone far enough on, I mean, to use a sort of catchphrase, decolonialization of your music courses at Rhodes?
Richard, it's an ongoing topic. We were a little bit ahead of the pack in changing our degree structure. The Roads Must Fall and the fees, but all of those protests happened sort of a year or two after we'd already changed. So we were quite pleased that we'd done that. But having said that, it's an ongoing topic which we as academics at tertiary level must interrogate, and we are interrogating. I'm extremely pleased with the development in postgraduate research in our department, which covers all aspects and all genres, and so there's that's kind of quadrupled in the last 15 years or so. But if we're looking at newcomers or students coming in and talking about music or studying music as such, have we decolonized sufficiently? And I'm not going to give you an answer yes, because I think it's a work in progress.
I think it's something we're very conscious of, and that's great to be part of a department and a university indeed that's moving forward or moving in absolutely the right direction. I'm always interested when students, we have this audition process at the beginning of the year, and in order to audition for either African ensembles, Western art music, or jazz, so offering the three pillars, the number of requests I get from students who haven't had the benefit of education in Western art music or jazz, you know, begging to start at beginner level at university in those genres of music, that still interests me. There's and it tells me that there's no shortage of interest, and for me that's actually that's the anchor of our music program. The minute there's no interest from the public in Western art music, let's say, then that's the time to consider moving away from it.
Yeah.
But even last week or 2 weeks ago when the students came in, the number of students I had to say, well, I'm really sorry, but you unfortunately can't start at this level because you simply won't pass. It's like you can't come in and do first year maths if you haven't done matric maths. It's a certain level in that particular genre. However, we can offer you either an academic course or we can offer you African ensembles where it does start at beginner level and it is possible. It takes me by surprise still the number of people who are actually quite desperate to start learning piano, guitar, trumpet, or jazz, drums, that kind of thing, and sit down and I say, all right, well, let's hear it. And they're like, well, we've never ever played or had any learning. So so for me, it's a complex issue. But I mean, I'm interested that the interest in Western art and jazz, it might be that few are coming in with those skills, and that's problematic for me because that's a problem at secondary education level, and there's much discussion amongst educationalists and music education about how the skills are actually being watered down and people are doing more general arts and music, and it's despite creative arts being kind of top of the list now in terms of what you require to have as a person going into a job, they look at your creative capabilities. It's kind of watered down at a lot of the secondary education at institutions. So that's the conversation we're having at the moment.
And it's great.
We are very aware and very involved and engaged with this issue.
That's fantastic. So your next choice is Leonard Cohen, You Want It Darker. Here it comes. That was Leonard Cohen from the album Leonard Cohen Essentials called You Want It Darker. The choice of Catherine Foxcroft, who's been my guest in People of Note tonight. And we're coming up to your final choice, and I think we should come back to you, and perhaps you can say either we play the last movement of one of your piano sonatas, or perhaps the last movement of Beethoven Piano Concerto No. 3. Maybe you can choose which you want.
Did you play that? We did the second movement of the Beethoven, so we can maybe move towards the last movement of, well, I love the second movement of my Rachmaninoff Sonata.
Okay, we'll play that. But before we do that, I just want to give all your details again, because if you want to get in touch with Catherine, it's c.foxcroft@ru.ac.za, c.foxcroft@ru.ac.za, or if you want to WhatsApp her, 079-310-2683. I'll give that again, 079-310-2683. And you can contact her there. But it's been an amazing couple of hours that we've spent together, and we've covered a lot of ground, and I'm very grateful for that. And we've had the sort of conversation I've not normally had here on People of Note about performance. We had a very interesting conversation a couple of weeks ago about styles of pianism from people like Mozevich, Paderewski, and it was to do with two South African teachers, Adolf Hallis and Isidore Epstein, and their styles of playing. It was a very interesting conversation, and it provoked quite a lot of mail back and forth. So if people want to email me, my email address is my name, R-C-O-C-K, rcock@iafrica.com, because we've brought up a lot of issues tonight, and I'm very grateful to you, Catherine, for doing that. So let's hear your final choice now, which is the second movement of the Rachmaninoff Sonata. It's marked Non Allegro Lento, and this is my guest playing. That was the second movement of the Rachmaninoff Piano Sonata No. 2, played by my guest in People of Note, Catherine Foxcroft, and that's from her latest CD called A Portrait. And if you write to her or WhatsApp her, she'll be able to get you a copy at a cost, of course. We musicians need some income. So there we are, another People of Note finished. And it's been a very interesting one. So thank you all at home for listening. And thank you, Catherine Foxcroft, for being on the program.
Ah, thank you, Richard. Great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And it just remains for me to say good night to our listeners. And don't forget to tune in during the week to The Full Works. That's every evening from 7 to 10, except on public holidays and Fridays when it's 6 to 9. So thanks for listening. I hope you've had a good weekend and you have a good week ahead. And to all of you, a very good night.